with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoot. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on the rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
We are live from the campus of Illinois State University. This is the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND and WZND.com. Week four has come and nearly gone. And what a week it's been. A lot has happened in the sports world here at ISU. We're going to open things up recapping a little high school football coverage we had going on last week. After that, we're talking some Redbird soccer. They had two games last weekend, two more games this weekend coming up at home. And we're not going to name her yet, but there's a certain someone on that Redbird soccer team who's pretty high up there in the national rankings for goals this season. After that, we're going to be talking some Redbird football, recapping their victory against Morehead State, previewing the Eastern Illinois game coming up this weekend. After that, Scott and Joey will be sitting down with Sydney Holt from Redbird Volleyball. They'll be talking a little Redbird Classic, a big weekend coming up for the team. After that, Leo Stoddher will join us from News and Sports to talk some hockey. We'll close things out with Pick 6. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone, 6:06 on the campus of Illinois State University, and what a beautiful Thursday night to be in the studio talking sports with probably two of my favorite people here, I'd say, in the world, honestly. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Hector. How are you doing?
I'm good. Joey?
And I'm doing good as well. I think it's a three goods around the board.
So I call you guys my favorite people in the world, and I don't get a compliment back. I like that. You just say, hi, how are you doing? That's nice. Beautiful. So let's get things going. We don't want to just not talk about sports, because that's what we're here for. That's what people are listening for. Last Friday, was a Chili Bowl. We had Normal Community taking on Normal West. That's a pretty big deal here in town.
It is, and I think all the locals kind of understand that. I mean, it's kind of the talk of the town. You hear about it. Me and Joey actually went to Normal West, talked to the coach, and he was all fired up about it. They didn't get the outcome that they wanted. Normal West did end up losing that game 19-14, so that's another loss on them. They are 1-1 now. But they're looking in the next week, and they're playing a team that's very beatable. They have Carson Camp, who's coming out. He's a three-year starter, and that's kind of the veteran experience that you need from him, and things are looking good for them this week.
Yeah, and if you look at the other side, looking at Normal Community, they're taking on, they're taking on Urbana, who is a very, very easy game for them. Urbana lost to Danville, Normal West's opponent coming up this week. They lost last week 53-22. They're 0-2. It's been a season to forget so far for Urbana. And so this should be a nice game for Normal Community to keep this momentum rolling and get some more steam under their belt here.
It is, and it's a very big weekend. We all remember high school, and we remember our homecomings. For these kids out there, these seniors, got a dance coming up. You got, you know, you're asking, you're having your proposals to get girls and they have them go there. So you know what it is. There's a lot of emotions riding for this week for those players. So it's going to be cool to see them. Thank God they have a good weekend. They have an easy week this week. But, you know, not every game is an easy week. Yes, they're 0-2. They have struggled in the past years. But, you know, no game is given. They're going to have to come out and still get that win. And, you know, a win's even better when you have a little dance the next day.
Yeah, this is definitely a big weekend for both teams. Like we said earlier, Normal Community taking on Urbana. Me and Steve Cease were actually talking about this game earlier this week because he's actually broadcasting the game. He's going to be down in Urbana broadcasting that one. But he said that should be, I think he said, a clock runner. That's how he described that game. it's going to be an easier week. You don't want to say an easy week. You never want to say a for sure win, because that just turns out bad most of the time. But normal community, an easier week at Urbana. Normal West taking on Danville, like you guys said. Pretty good chance for Normal West to bounce back from the loss they had last week and get back in that win column. And Scotty, you said it, the big time for high schoolers everywhere. Weather's getting cooler with Friday night lights every Friday. Homecoming's right around the corner. It's a big week for both teams. We'll see what both teams do this Friday. We'll give you more updates next week on the Red Zone. Let's move on to Redbirds soccer now. And boys, we had Kate Delfava on the show last week. And let's just start off with, we thought that her stats were impressive last week. As of yesterday, she is ranked fourth, tied for fourth, for goals. She has 8 goals on the season. That's tied for fourth in the entire country.
Exactly, and she had a huge weekend. On that Friday game, they played NIU, and she had 2 goals in that game. Then they played U of I. They had a big loss there. U of I, you obviously want to beat our rival. But she did have another goal in that game. They were actually up 2-1. And they gave up 2 penalty kicks within like 40 minutes of each other. I know the 89th minute they gave up that 3-2 loss. But I mean, it's huge to get a red card in that game as well.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys were watching the game, but the red card that was called, it was Haley Smith, the goaltender. It was just a kind of a hard tackle going for the ball, and it was debatable. I was talking with another intern, Anthony Ferretti, about it, and it was a call that I don't necessarily agree with, but you know, it happens. And I think the best thing for them to do is just look ahead. They've got Utah State and Western Illinois coming up, 2 games that are both at home. Fridays is going to be at 7 p.m. Sundays is at 1, and I think those are 2 games where they can really rebound off that loss.
Yeah, and kind of going back to that, I think it is a little bit of frustration when you're a keeper and you're up 2-1, and like I said, we're playing their rival. When you kind of give up 2 penalty kicks like that, there's a lot of frustration there. So losing that game 3-2, I mean, I can understand the red card that late in the game. Obviously, those are kind of the garbage minutes. You get about 4 minutes, maybe 3 minutes of extra time, but obviously you don't want to lose your keeper in any game.
No, yeah, I'm definitely not a big fan of and I get it, it's the rules, it's soccer, like that's just a part of the rules. Not a fan of keepers being able to get dealt a red card. They don't leave the game, right? And Joey, you played soccer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if the keeper gets a red card, they don't leave the game, but someone else on the team has to leave the game, right?
Yeah.
You see, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of, I don't know. I just don't like it. It ended up costing the Redbirds the game.
Playing keeper in high school, I understand when you're going, because it's scary when you've got somebody running at you and you have to go cover up the ball. I've gotten my fair share of cleats in the stomach. You know, and so to get a red card off of a play like that, it's got to be infuriating, and especially when you're trying to fight for that win late in the game.
And the thing is, I see both sides, because obviously if you compare it to hockey, I know they always say soccer is like the hockey on grass and stuff like that. And if a goalie were to come out and poke check someone on a breakaway, whatever it may be, that goalie's going to get a penalty, but that goalie's not going to come out and sit in the box. You're going to have a player from the team come out and sit, and it's going to be a 5-on-4. So it's kind of that same structure, and I understand it there, because you can't – what are you going to have, no goalie in there? I mean, you only get one goalie and you get 3 subs. So obviously that makes sense there. But, that late in the game, obviously when you're coming back, you're down 3-2, going 10-11 is very tough.
Yeah, it's definitely a heartbreaking loss for the Redbirds soccer team last week. And like you guys said, that red card actually did come in the 89th minute. And that was what gave U of I the lead and secured the victory for them in that one. But they got that victory. They got the other victory against NIU. This is a big weekend coming up. They have the final 2 of 4 games. They had a 4-game stretch at home. This is the back end of those 4 games. Like you said, Joey, they're taking on Utah State and Western Illinois. 2 very winnable games, and I'd say they're 2 pretty big games. You want to take at least 1, if not 2, at home before you got to go back out on the road.
And absolutely, and I mean, it's more important because they're 2-4. Obviously, they want to start better than that, but they get these 2 wins, they're back at .500. The season's kind of flipping around a little bit on them, so these are definitely 2 very important games for them.
Yeah, so Redbirds soccer, they have Utah State coming in. Utah State, they'll play Utah State on Friday. They'll be taking on Western Illinois on Sunday. Big weekend for them before they hit the road again. Let's transition over to Redbird football, because they're on the road this weekend as well. It is the 108th, I believe. Yeah, 108th Mid-America Classic. They're taking on Eastern Illinois. They will be in Charleston this weekend. So the Redbirds, really impressive victory at home last week against Morehead State, but they're back out on the road this weekend.
Exactly, and it's always hard playing on the road, but they're coming off a 42-14 win where James Robinson ran for 3 touchdowns. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Obviously, week one, we wanted him to be a little better. You know, against Northern Illinois, obviously he got stuffed. They had a game plan for him. They were ready, but he came back, 3 touchdowns. You couldn't really ask more of him. And there was a lot of other players that kind of stood out, but kind of in a bad way. I mean, Brady Davis threw 24 for like 45 or 48, maybe even 55. And that's just something that you can't have. You need your quarterback completing passes. You need to have a better game, especially from a guy transferring from Memphis.
And I was calling Isaac Missile, and I called this game on Saturday. And it's Morehead State, obviously. They're the Pioneer League team. It's a non-scholarship league. So they are not up to the same caliber as ISU. And it was very clear the ISU defense was all over them. But it is it's inexcusable for Brady Davis to have a poor showing against a team that's way worse, like, all around. And it was it really brought up some red flags, because this Redbirds team is supposed to, we've had a lot of guys who are coming up and who are getting older in the program, the more veteran guys, but the leader of this team is not. Through the first 2 games, I am not sold at all on his last 2 performances.
Yeah, this was definitely the game I'm sure Redbird fans everywhere were hoping that Brady Davis would have his coming out this season. He did struggle at Northern. Everyone knows he struggled at Northern, but it's Northern. They're a good team. They have a really solid defense. They not only neutralized Brady Davis, but they held James Robinson to a minuscule amount of yards on the ground. But yeah, that Morehead State game was definitely the game that Redbird fans wanted Brady Davis to make a statement in, and he really didn't. But that ground game was there, like you said, that defense was there, and now they got to go on the road again. It's going to be tough for Brady Davis to have that coming out party on the road, but the good thing is they are playing Eastern Illinois. Eastern has struggled as of late. The Redbirds have won the last 3 matchups against Eastern. Eastern's 0-2 on the season. They have a brand new head coach this year. This is the game, hopefully, as we hoped last week, that Brady Davis puts everything together. You'll see that air game from Brady Davis. James Robinson, we know James Robinson will be there on the ground. We know that defense is going to be solid. So this is a game where you want to see Brady Davis have his coming out party and really show that this is a complete team that can make a run into the playoffs this year.
And it's not like he doesn't have the weapons to do it. Like we saw Braxton Haley, who's obviously a stud, and he's got other weapons too, especially in the backfield. And so it's very disheartening, I think, for these Redbird fans to come out and watch their quote-unquote franchise quarterback perform at a subpar level.
Yeah, I mean, even like you said, the weapons, you think of Taylor Grimes, who's come out and had a lot of receptions. He's had a couple touchdowns. I mean, he's got over like 155 yards or something like that, so he's really playing very well. But then you look at the opposite side of the ball, and you have Luther Kirk and Christian Uphoff, who have been playing unbelievable, and you need your veteran defensive players to come out. I mean, you look at how they played against a team like NIU. I mean, they had a game then, and they only allowed 14 points by Morehead State, so you kind of got to see that as well. It's kind of like the Bears a little bit. Their offense is a little shaky. Hopefully, we're all hoping it gets a little better, but their defense has been staying strong, and you're going to need that throughout the year.
Yeah, and we do need to step aside real quick for a break, but Scott, you're exactly right. That defense, we knew coming into the defense, we heard from Brock Speck himself, the head coach, that this defense was going to be there week in and week out, and it was really going to come down to whether or not his offense can perform. They performed 1 week. They didn't perform the other. Redbirds go into this game against Eastern Illinois with a 1-1 record. Redbirds are in Charleston this weekend taking on Eastern. We need to step aside. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hello and welcome back to the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. We are currently joined by North Texas Invitational and Oral Roberts Invitational all-tournament team player ISU Volleyball, Sydney Holt. Sydney, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sydney, the team has a big weekend coming up. For those of you that don't know, the Redbird Invitational is this weekend. We've got teams like UCF, 14th-ranked U of I, and 7th-ranked Marquette all coming into Redbird Arena. So, Sydney, what does it mean for you and the program to host such a tournament as prestigious as this and have these teams here?
Yeah, it's super exciting. I think these last 2 weekends, they were really good for us in preparing for this, but I think this is like the weekend to watch and the weekend to be here for, and we're just super excited that Redbird Arena is going to be able to open with its new seating. Looks really good. We're excited to host these top 25 teams. I think it's going to be some really good competition all weekend long, and yeah, we're really excited.
And you mentioned it's given you a good chance to prepare a little bit, and I want to dive in a little bit on tomorrow's game specifically. You guys are taking on U of I. They are 32-4 last year, made it to the Final Four. They've got an All-American and a great supporting cast around her. How do you go into preparing for a game like that, knowing that it's your home opener and, you, like you said, it's going to be bumping in there? How does the team get ready for a match like that?
Yeah. It's obviously a very big opponent, but we focus on approaching each team the same. So just keeping that mindset that any team is beatable, but we're obviously going to respect everything that they've done, and we know what they can do. We've been preparing for each of their attackers, and we know their defense, we know their offense. Our coaches make us really prepared for that. So I think we're ready, and I think we can beat this really good team.
And, Sydney, we have done our research a little bit, and we found out that 1,100 tickets have been sold as of last week. So what's it like for you to play in front of a crowd of this magnitude?
It's kind of crazy. I mean, we've always had really good fans, but I think especially with having some local teams, and I know there's some local talent on UCF, so there's going to be so many people here, and I think something that drives us is our fans and the atmosphere that we do get in Redbird Arena, and I think it's just going to bring us to that next level, and having a loud and close fans, like I know with our new seats, our fans are going to be much closer to us, so that'll be really good for us.
And kind of diving back a little bit, a little personal question for you. I want to know, like, what's your story? What got your passion going for volleyball? What made you pick volleyball as a sport that you wanted to really pursue as a career?
Yeah, so I've been playing volleyball since I was, like, 8 years old, and my mom was actually a college volleyball player, so that's kind of where I got started, and ever since I started, I just fell in love with the game. It's given me some of the closest friendships in my life, and it's taught me so many things, how to work hard, how to be disciplined, time management. It's kind of just shaped who I am today, and it's a big part of me.
Absolutely, and you brought up time management. What is it like kind of keeping your schoolwork like in check while you're going on road trips and things like that? Like, how do you kind of manage everything?
Yeah, it's definitely, freshman year, it was definitely hard to figure it all out, but we have so many people helping us, all our support staff at the Athletic Study Center. We have our athletic trainers, our academic advisors, all these people that help us get to where we need to be. We're just really thankful and supportive for all of that, and they help keep us in check.
Yeah. And kind of going off of that, and you've talked about a little bit about what ISU brings to the table, but what made your choice coming out of high school?
Yeah.
You had a lot of success. What made ISU the school for you and the program that you wanted to play for?
Yeah, I mean, obviously ISU volleyball is a really good program. We have good past teams, good records, but I think the thing that drawed me here the most was the family aspect of the team. Even when I came on my visit, all the players are so welcoming. They were so nice, and the coaches just like seem like family with all the players, and I think that's really important within a team.
What has your like experience been like playing for Leah Johnson?
It's been awesome. She's the best coach I've ever had. She's not only a coach to me, but like a life mentor. She knows the game so well. She's taught me so many things, especially with me playing right side the past years and now playing middle. She's just been really good with that. And even talking to her about stuff in my life, in school, in my home life, and she's just really supportive.
And you brought up your transition between positions. I was reading about that a little bit. How has that gone for you so far, just in this season?
Yeah, it's really good. I played middle a lot growing up, so I'm comfortable with that. And I know I like to take on that challenge, and it's been fun.
And kind of going over, talking about you a little bit, what has been like your most memorable moment here? And now being a junior, you've had 3 years to kind of experience some things. What's been like the most memorable for you?
Probably this past year on our senior night when we beat UNI. It was like probably the most fun game I've ever been a part of. The atmosphere in Redbird Arena was awesome. And to get a top 25 win was awesome for our program. It was just such a fun night.
Absolutely. I mean, me and actually Will Farlow, who's listening to the show right now, we were on call for that game, and that Redbird Arena was electric.
It was
so fun to call, so fun to watch. But like kind of going off that, like, can you give us, like, take us through your pregame routine, like playlist, pregame meal. What do you do? What gets you going before a game?
So we do pregame meal, about 2 or 3 hours before every game. It's regular chicken and vegetables, all that good stuff.
Gotta get the protein in there.
Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then the team just hangs out in the locker room for like an hour. We listen to music, we dance, sometimes we watch TV, we just get in that mindset. We have dance parties, so fun. And then when it's time to go to the court, flip that switch, we're focused, we're ready to go. Yeah, game time.
It's actually funny that you bring up that dance party because now we're going to take the time of the show. We talked a little bit about hyping up the tournament, but now we're going to kind of put you on the spot a little bit.
Oh, boy.
So we have some questions for you here. And we're going to kind of give you, we've got like 8 questions, and it's about your teammates. So
okay.
Whatever one relates the most to your teammates, we want to kind of go. So I'll start off.
Go ahead.
So for the first question here, who do you trust the most on the aux cord?
Ooh, on the aux cord? Probably Steph.
Steph Jankiewicz.
Yeah, she's got a pretty good aux. Or Sarah Kushner. She's
okay.
Got a good aux too.
And you brought up you have the dance parties before the games. Which of your teammates has the worst
thinks they're the best?
Yeah. Ooh. It's the worst false confidence.
Honestly, I might put myself in that category, but also, I would say Kendi, maybe.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I appreciate the honesty, putting yourself up there.
Yeah. She's got to, like,
I
help
like to think
out
I'm
here.
Good, but I just know.
Yeah. I think we're all like that. You're in the studio, we're always dancing. And,
yeah.
And, who's most likely to wear sweatpants on a first date?
Paige Hilliard.
That was quick. There's
she
no
wears
thought.
Sweatpants every single day. She's from Hawaii. It's like 90 degrees here. She's wearing sweatpants and a sweatshirt to class. It's crazy.
All right, this is my favorite question. If you were stranded on an island and you could only bring one of your teammates, for whatever reason, who would it be?
Monica Miller. Because she knows how to do everything. Like, I don't even know. I can't even explain it. She's just like a handyman. She's like a mom. She can do it all. I would trust her to do that.
Who,
on an island with me.
Who is most likely to win the lottery and lose the ticket?
Ooh. Kendall.
This one's a tough one. Kendall.
Kendall Meyer. She's always losing things, so.
Okay.
All right. And then we'll wrap it up one more. Who is most likely to star in their own reality TV show?
Probably Emmy. Emmy Ogogar.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Got a little information, and now if they're listening, they're going to come back. It will be on the website.
Yeah.
So they're going to know exactly what was said here tonight.
Well, Sydney, thank you so much for coming on the show. Everybody, make sure you go out and support Redbird Volleyball tomorrow night at 7. They're taking on the U of I. They're 14th ranked in the nation. It's going to be a huge game. Redbird Arena is going to be bumping. We are going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere, because when we come back, we're going to have some fantastic news coming from Leo Stoddaher. Then we're going to be talking Blackhawks hockey. This is the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Barstool Big Cat bringing us back into the show, and I'm sorry, I don't know of many talk shows at a student-run radio station that have Dan Katz as a bump.
Absolutely, it's something you always want to see, and he's got such a great voice, such a great following, and it's nice to have him bump us back a little bit.
So we're talking some Blackhawks hockey, and you know, you kind of tend to forget that hockey exists, especially in the summer.
Exactly. I mean, hockey goes all year round. It really never ends.
The Hawks open up their preseason schedule on Monday. It's right around the corner. It's coming up. And I wasn't ready for it. Leo texted me today because he just to tell me what he wanted to talk about. And when he said Blackhawks, I was like, it's September.
Yeah.
But it's September. The Hawks start on Monday. That's crazy. Leo. We all know that the Hawks, at least last year, the last couple of seasons, they haven't been the same Chicago Blackhawk team that most of us are used to watching on the ice.
Right. I think they've definitely undergone sort of a change in the guard. They lost a lot of the players that they had when they were winning cups every 3 and 6 years. But now they've been developing a new core of young players with Dylan Strome, Alex DeBrincat, Eric Gustafson. These new players have been coming in, getting experience and becoming ready to get that valuable experience.
And it feels like it's gone by so fast. Because I remember when Patrick Kane was playing in preseason, we saw this little 5'10 guy out there go out there, and he was so small, timid. And now it's been 10, 11 years. These guys are in their 30s. I mean, you look at Brent Seabrook, you look at Duncan Keith. My dad, actually, I remember like 12 years ago, my dad's like, that guy is going to be a Hall of Famer. And he was talking about Duncan Keith, and now these guys are on their way out. And it's kind of sad. But like you said, with Dylan Strome and these guys, we're bringing in a nice young core. And, you know, it really is time to start rebuilding.
Right. And you still got some productive years left out of Kane, Taves, Keith, and Seabrook. So that's why if they can surround them with young players right now, like Kirby Dach, the guy they drafted third overall this season, they could still make another run at the Cup while still getting production out of Kane and Taves.
I don't know if I'd say we necessarily have much production left out of Brent Seabrook. I think his contract is a little hideous,
yeah,
personally. But I do want to ask you, what do you feel like? This is something that, being a Blackhawks fan, I've watched over the past couple of years. Like, Stan Bowman does this thing where he did it with the Artemi Panarin thing. He did it again, snagging Andrew Shaw. He did it when we got Andrew Ladd back for the year. He always tries to go after the guys that we had when they were really good that we couldn't re-sign because we won the championship. Right. And then he tries to pull them back. And I personally love the Andrew Shaw signing, just because he's a real gritty guy. But like, how do you feel about him kind of trying to recreate the success of those teams rather than trying to get a little more creative and do a little more digging?
Well, I think some of the previous reunions, like the Marcus Kruger, or even acquiring Johnny Oduya and Brian Campbell back, that was for Joel Quenneville, because those were players that he played so well under his system and that he really loved playing. And then when they tried bringing in other players, Quenneville didn't like them, and they had to trade them for pennies on the dollar. So I think the thought behind that originally was get players you knew Quenneville trusted. But I think with the Shaw reacquisition, it's because his presence in the locker room was so missed, and they haven't been able to find somebody that could fill that void.
Yeah, and I love Andrew Shaw. I have a shirt from when they won the second Stanley Cup, and he had the big stitches in his face. I've got a shirt that's got his face with like the blood leaking out of the stitches.
Oh, man.
And
that's
he's
my favorite Hawk of all time.
My buddy and I have matching shirts, and the Stanley Cup came to the Quad Cities once when we were in high school, and we wore our Andrew Shaw shirts, and I've got a picture of myself next to the Stanley Cup just cheesing with this dude all bloody on my shirt.
Well, I was disappointed because I have his jersey, and I literally got it the year before he got traded. So he gets traded, and I'm like, are you kidding me? And then my brother texts me when we get him back. He's like, hey, your jersey's relevant again.
That's the same. No, that's the same thing.
Go.
I have an Andrew Shaw, the green, the St. Paddy's Day ones. Right. I bought that on clearance when he got traded, when he left. And then he came back, and I was like, that's cash. I got that for like $60. That's huge.
Yeah. Well, and Leo, kind of talking about the Blackhawks here, the first thing that comes to mind is you did say we have a lot of years left in Kane. I mean, Kane is obviously a future Hall of Famer.
Right.
And a lot of other guys that we have, Seabrook, Keith, we have years with them. But when we're kind of rebuilding and we had a year where we didn't make the playoffs, when you have a guy like Kane, you have a guy like Taves who are like 30, 31, you know, kind of pushing 32, as much as we love them, as much as we had that, you know, so-called dynasty, a lot of Chicago fans would say, is it kind of time we trade them because they do have about 3 years left, 4 years of being in their prime, being good? I mean, they're leaving that prime. They only got about 2-3 years. I mean, we can get some solid picks and rebuild, or do we hang on to what we have and build with the young that we have as well?
Kane and Taves, I think John McDonough will not let Stan Bowman trade them. I think they're going to be Blackhawks for life. But I think it's not necessarily a bad thing if they stay to the end of their contracts, because Kane is just always finding new ways to add to his game. And Taves, too, it seemed like he was going to regress, but then he's improved so much these past two off seasons, just been working on so many different areas of his game, improving defensively, and then even last season he improved a lot offensively. So I think those two you're going to get production out of. I think if you're going to trade two players from the core, it would have to be Brent Seabrook or Duncan Keith. I mean, Seabrook's contract, I don't think you'll be able to move, but Keith has been on a bit of a decline probably since 2015. And you have all these promising defensive prospects coming up in the system, so somebody's going to have to go from the blue line.
Here's the thing, and I said this last year too when it like really became apparent that the Hawks weren't going to be that good. They're still a good hockey team. They still have those guys, those older guys that were on the team when they won the Stanley Cup. But I feel like the Hawks are in the position right now where they have the talent to make a run, but it's super hard for them to get to that run, and they don't know whether or not it's time to go into a full rebuild or still go after that cup.
I think that's definitely right. It seems like the past two off seasons, you can't really tell what direction they're going in. Like, they've had the signings like Robin Leonard, where it seems like they're going for it, but then they trade assets away like Dominic Cahoon, a player that showed promise last year. So you don't really know what direction they're going in.
And when you look at, like, when you compare the Stanley Cup teams to the teams today, I think one of the things that stands out the most is the depth that we had on some of those teams, like really great fourth guys, line guys like Marcus Kruger, huge penalty killer. He was a great on the fourth line. Guys like Ben Smith, you know, just these names that you could like throw out there.
Right.
Dustin Byfuglien, like before he was a stud in Winnipeg. He was like a second line defenseman, third line forward for us.
2015, they were so deep they had the third line of Antoine Vermette, Patrick Sharp, and Teuvo Teravainen, and that line was a monster against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
They were so good. That was a great pickup, too, that Antoine Vermette from
the
Coyotes.
Guys, I think we're forgetting one thing. Yes, these guys are good, but you have to pay them.
Yes.
You can't afford Dustin Byfuglien, and we weren't even using Dustin Byfuglien right. We were taking his big body, and we were putting him in front of the net and having him block shots. We didn't even have him play D when he was here in Chicago. So then he goes to Winnipeg. He becomes a defender. He gets better at skating, and, you know, a quick shout-out. He played for CYA. He's actually from Illinois, so it was tough to see him go. But, I mean, come on. We got to think about that. But we're talking about just going back really quick on the whole Brent Seabrook thing. Yeah, you're like, you know what, let's keep Kane and Taves, trade Brent Seabrook, but – guys, a team has to want Brent Seabrook.
Yeah,
a team has to want to take on that contract, and a team is like, he's declining, and no one wants to pay him top end dollars when he's on the decline. Guys like Kane and Taves, we don't want to see them go. I don't think Kane ever goes. Taves maybe
no,
not.
I know.
And the
no,
only
no.
reason I say that, I know you're going to debate that. I know all fans out there are listening. No, we don't want to lose Taves, but the captain is always a guy that usually gets traded when they're on their way out and they're on their decline. Now, we need a good goaltender. Leonard, yes, we brought him in. He's very good, but he's not 100% proven. We look at Crawford. Crawford, unbelievable between the pipes, but we see what he had last year. He's had so many. He's had mental problems. He's been in AA. He's had concussions. You look at a guy like that, and everyone knows, Joey, you played hockey. Leo, you played hockey. Everyone out there listening that's played hockey knows that it's between the pipes. That's where it starts. You need a solid goaltender to win, and then after that, you need defensemen. So you kind of got to build that back front because we don't have that. And when you're looking at guys that you need to trade, the big-name guys are kind of – because forwards are a dime a dozen.
The Hawks went out, and they got a couple, like, solid defensemen. Ali Mata and Calvin DeHaan are two, like, good defensemen that you can put in there. But I don't think Jonathan Taves, for what he did for this franchise, like, I don't think, even if he deserves, even if his
play... Look at Corey Perry. Look what he did for the Ducks.
Yeah, but Corey Perry's different. Like, he's not the face of the franchise. He's not the Ryan Getzlaff, right?
He wasn't Ryan Getzlaff, but...
Exactly. And
but,
like,
okay, but Kane and Taves are the face of the Hawks. And Duncan
yeah, but
Keith.
They're together.
So
they're together. That's why they were going to be on NHL 16 together, Scott, because they're the joint face of the franchise. I don't think either of them ever.
But they're not going to be the face of the franchise forever. I mean, look at the face of the franchise we have. We've had Denny Savard. We've had Stan Mikita. We've had Bobby Hall. It cycles out. These guys can't play forever.
You bring up the Bobby Hall thing. I think that's why the Blackhawks don't want to get rid of Kane and Taves, was because Rocky Wirtz's father wouldn't pay Bobby Hall. He then left to go to the WHA, play for Winnipeg, and was bitter for the Hawks for a few decades. I think when John McDonough took over, he was afraid of that. First thing he did was bring back Bobby Hall and Stan Mikita, and now he's almost afraid of that happening with Kane and Taves, which is why he made them give Brent Seabrook that huge contract extension, was because he's afraid of Kane and Taves leaving and becoming bitter towards the organization.
No, yeah, honestly, I think if Kane and Taves were going to leave, if Kane and Taves weren't going to be on the Blackhawks their entire career, I think that time would have probably rolled around already. I think if they weren't going to be together, if they weren't playing their entire career in Chicago, I think at least one of them would have been not playing in a Hawks uniform anymore.
All right, so looking at we've talked about all the roster moves they made, but Leo, looking ahead to this season, Hector's got it pulled up right now. ESPN's got them ranked 21st out of the 31 teams in the power rankings, which is, I personally think, is a little low. But I just want to know, how do you think they're going to fare compared? We saw a disappointing season last year. What do you think is going to be the key to the success in finding the playoffs again?
I think the key to success would be improving the penalty kill and the defense, because last year, if you look at all the offensive statistics, they were up at the top. Their power play was firing on all cylinders, but it was the defense that was holding them back. I think they were top five in power play, but then bottom three in penalty killing percentages. So if they could fix that, they could certainly be in a better trajectory.
And I like how you bring up special teams, because I was so frustrated when we lost Nick Jalmerson. I mean, that guy blocked so many shots. And, like, losing him, losing Shaw, losing Desjardins, we lost so many guys that just got, like, a term that we use in hockey, for the boys, FTB, going out there and blocking shots. Right. You need that grit. And we have not had that. My dad's listening right now, and he is probably, like, just looking up at the sky saying, Scott, you got it, because my dad is a huge guy that likes, you know, that people get, that can throw the body, and we have too many players that are just, like, they're pretty players. Like, you know, like, they're and they don't use the body, and they don't get in front of shots, and we need that.
Scotty, don't even get me started on Nicholas Jalmerson. The fact that we gave him to the Coyotes makes me sick to my stomach. And who are we getting back?
Connor Murphy.
Well, Connor Murphy.
He's been a solid player.
He's been solid.
But
and then,
he's
like,
not, he
he's
has
no Nick
Jalmerson.
He's no Nick Jalmerson. And, like, oh my God. It drives me insane. Some of the things that Stan Bowman does, just. I'm dumbfounded.
All right. So, like Joey said, the Hawks, 21st in the power rankings. And these are old. I think this one, there hasn't been a more recent one. This one's from the beginning of August. They have the Hawks ranked at 21st, but Stanley Cup odds are 35-1. I was scrolling through it. There's a couple teams. There's at least four teams that I saw that have worse odds to win the Stanley Cup and are ranked higher in the power rankings. So what do you think? Do you think, like, Leo, do you think this might be the year that the Hawks can finally, you know, kind of start turning things back around and start looking like the team they looked like when they won those three cups?
I think that if a lot of things need to go right for them to do it, but I think they can, because after they made the coaching change last year, it took them about a good 2 weeks to get adjusted to Jeremy Colleton, and that's basically what sunk their season, was that two-week slump they had. But then right around December, they started looking like a better team under him, and they really started showing progress. And you know, the young guys like Strom and DeBrincat took steps forward, and they brought in Drake Caggiula, who was kind of like a gritty guy that really fired up the team, and then Eric Gustafson progress. So if they continue that success they had under Colleton this season, I think they could probably squeak in as a wild card team. But again, a lot of things are going to have to go right.
And did you like the Colleton move? Did you like mid season making the coaching change?
I didn't like it mid season. I think they should have either done it at the start of the season or at the end of the season, because that 2 week stretch they had right after he came in was really what held them back. Like, it was just too late in the season to acclimate. He needed a training camp with his team to install a system to get his message clear to the guys.
And we do need to take we are running out of time. We need to take a quick break. But Leo, these Blackhawks, like you said, that 2 week stretch there after that coaching change is what weighed them down. But here's why I'm confident that this Hawks team might have their fair amount of success this season, was because of the push they made towards the end of the season. No one expected them to be somewhat in a playoff race at the end of last year, and that's exactly what this Hawks team did.
Right. And I think if that team shows up from start to finish this year, they could be a playoff team, because they did look like a legit contender. I don't think they could be a Stanley Cup contender, but they could certainly contend for the playoffs this season.
And, you know, a cool thing, too, is they are a young team. They had a young coach last year, and they were kind of learning the new scheme. And obviously that's with any sport, when you have a new coach, new chemistry. So it is a nice light at the end of the tunnel to see that this team did have a lot of chemistry towards the end of the year, because it shows a lot of potential for next year.
And we'll see exactly how this season turns out. Preseason play for the Hawks starts on Monday. They're in Washington, taking on the Capitals. That game is at 6. So preseason hockey underway. That means regular season hockey just right around the corner. Up next on Red Zone, best segment in all of sports talk radio, Pick 6. But that's coming up after the break. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. And we are unfortunately nearing the end of our time here. 6:52. We have about 8 minutes left. So we're going to have some fun in those 8 minutes. Scotty, you know what time it is. Hit the bump.
It's the Pick 6. Only on the pulse of Redbird Nation. 103.3 WZND.
And I believe that was week three of flawless execution by Scott on the boards.
Guys, like I said, that first week just haunts me every night. Just it's a thought. So we got to keep it going here.
I love that, Scotty. Look at that. All right, pick six time. We had a fairly eventful week in the first week of the NFL season last week. I'm sure everyone knows. We had a tie. The Lions and Cardinals tied. Matt Stafford was not able to beat the rookie. The rookie almost came back and beat Matt Stafford. Game ended in a tie.
And what an exciting game that was. That comeback of a rookie quarterback like that, especially over Steve Cease's Lions. I love it.
And ties make things weird in the pick six standings. So I was sitting in the news and sports office earlier. Couldn't decide whether I wanted to count it as a tie in the standings or a loss. I went with a loss because the point of the game is to pick a winner. If you don't pick the right winner, it's a loss. No one won that game. It's a loss for everyone. So everyone has at least one loss to their record. So let's check the standings. We'll start at the very bottom. Leo, it's not your fault. Let's try to improve it, though. The guests are sitting at the bottom of the standings. They went 2-4 last week. Scott's over there laughing.
Yeah, I feel your pain.
Yeah, Scott's over there laughing, but Scott's tied for last with the guests at 2-4. Scott and the guests, tough weeks. It's all right. Week one, maybe they'll bounce back. Probably not. But up at top, there's a three-way tie for first. Steve Cease, 3-3 last week. Joey Dwyer, 3-3. Hector Kerryon, 3-3. It's a big week, too. There's a lot of ties.
It feels good to be on the top. Hector, I hope we stay here all season long, baby.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt. I'm never going to see lower than second on the standings. Let's get to it, though. Week two of pick six, we have six new games on the slate. First game tonight, probably getting underway soon. I assume it's getting underway soon. Bucks at Panthers. Scott, who do you have?
This one was an easy one for me. Watching the Panthers lose last week and Cam Newton and the team they have, DJ Moore, I'm going to have to go with the Carolina Panthers, Hector.
All right, Leo.
I'm also picking the Panthers just because I don't trust Jameis Winston and the Bucks. Going with Carolina on this one.
Scott, you said it was an easy choice watching the Panthers lose, and I thought you were going to say the Bucks, and I was going to laugh right in your face because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a dumpster fire, so I'm going Absolutely. Panthers as well.
Yeah, go. I was thrown off a little bit there. I didn't know what to say because he threw a curveball. I swung and missed at the curveball. I wasn't ready for him to say Panthers. Steve Cease, taking the Panthers. I'm taking the Panthers as well. The Bucks don't have an offensive line. They're not a very good team. Up next, this is a big one. Vikings in Lambeau taking on the Packers. Scott.
This one's a no-brainer for me. I think the Vikings are going to win this one, not only because I'm just not really keen on the Packers this year. The Vikings just look good. They have a solid offense. Kirk Cousins is playing pretty well, better than he did last year. If he can step it up and play into this offense, the Vikings are going to be scary.
Leo, who you taking?
I'm taking the Packers in this one. I think the Packers are going on a slight revenge tour this year. And it's early. They look resilient. I think at home they're going to be tough to beat. This much momentum riding after last week's win.
Resilient. What a great word. Yeah. Unfortunately for Kirk Cousins, the Packers are 1-0, which makes them over 500. And Kirk Cousins doesn't beat teams over 500. So I unfortunately have to go Packers as well.
Kirk Cousins just struggles to beat teams in general. Doesn't really matter what their record is. But I'm taking the Packers. Aaron Rodgers didn't have a good game against the Bears. Not many quarterbacks do. They're at home. He's going to bounce back. He's going to have a game. I'm taking the Packers. Steve Cease, throwing a little curveball. He's taking the Vikings. Questionable pick, but that's what Steve does in pick six. He makes questionable picks. Up next, Seahawks taking on the Steelers in Pittsburgh.
See, this one's going to be a fun game because I think both teams are really cool, and I really like Juju Smith-Schuster on the Steelers, but Big Ben just did not look good last week, and it just left a bad taste in my mouth. I'm going to have to go with Seattle.
I'm also picking Seattle. They kind of look like that team they were in 2013 with the Legion of Boom, a new-look Legion of Boom, with Jadeveon Clowney and those two twin brothers they got in the secondary. I think they certainly have a good defense this year, so I'm going with the Seahawks.
I got to agree. I think... Not a knee-jerk overreaction about the Steelers' loss, but I think I was just very impressed by Seattle's offense. I mean, Chris Carson's a dog. They've got Rashad Penny back there, too. And DK Metcalf looked unreal. So I got to go Seahawks as well.
You see, I'm not agreeing with you guys there. I cannot take the Seahawks. I'm taking the Steelers. I think Big Ben bounces back at home, too. It's a tough matchup playing the Patriots in New England week one. I think the Steelers bounce back. They take that one. Steve Cease also taking the Steelers. Up next, we have the Saints in L.A. taking on the Rams.
And we all know about that controversial call last year. Drew Brees definitely did not forget that. And I think he's going to come out. I think this game is going to be just lights out offense. But I'm going to have to go with Drew Brees. I'm going to have to go with the Saints after that performance that they had last week on Monday night.
So I'm going against you, Scott. I'm going with the Rams here. I kept saying it last year that I thought the Saints were kind of a one-year wonder, that they do this every few years where they look like a contender, then falter off the next season. And I think the Rams just look so much better. They kind of are playing with a bitter taste in their mouth after the Super Bowl loss. So I think they're going to get rolling in week two.
Who dat? We're going with the Saints on this one, baby.
Yeah, it's easy. Can't bet against Drew Brees. He's my fantasy quarterback. Had himself a nice showing against the Texans. I'm taking the Saints. Steve Cease taking the Rams. So going with the home team. Up next, this is a big game for everyone in the studio right now. The Bears are in Colorado taking on the Broncos. Scott.
You know, a lot of people, even my roommates, have been hating on Trubisky, and I think he's going to come out and have a very good week. So I'm going to have to go with the Bears here. The Broncos lost to the Raiders. I think the Bears got this.
I'm just trying to throw a wrench in everybody's plans. I figure on a show full of Bears fans, I got to help our pick. I heard what happened last week where everybody picked the Bears and they lost, so I'm going with the Broncos here just for the guests' sake.
All right, Leo, it was nice to have you on. We'll never see you again.
Fair enough.
I'm going with the Bears.
I like that. He's playing the game right. I'm taking the Bears. Steve's taking the Bears. Final game on the slate. We have the Eagles in Atlanta taking on the Falcons. This is a Sunday night matchup. Scott.
Matty Ice and the Falcons.
I'm going with the Eagles here.
Yeah, Matty Ice, more like Matty not good. We're going with the Eagles.
Yeah, Steve C's taking the Falcons. Don't know why. I'm going with the Eagles. You got to be smart when you play the game. That's going to do it for today. That's the end of our show, and what a show it was. Joey, Leo, Scott, thank you all for making this probably the easiest thing I do down here.
Hey, it's all our pleasure. I can only speak for myself, but this is like the best part of my week. Getting to sit in the studio with you guys and just talk a little Redbird sports, a little pro sports.
Yeah, Leo, thanks for coming on. Thanks for being the news and sports guest this week. Scotty, great job behind the board.
Absolutely. Thank you. You know, it was tough at first, but I'm starting to get the hang of it a little bit.
A quick thank you to Redbird Volleyball and Sydney Holt for taking the time to come talk to us tonight. They have a big weekend coming up, the Redbird Classic. Redbird Volleyball taking on U of I tomorrow night at 7. Then they play UCF on Saturday at 5:30, and they round out the Redbird Classic on Sunday when they take on number 7 Marquette at 3 p.m. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to WZND.com. You can listen to the entire thing there. Our very own Scott Rosala will have that up soon. What a show it was. We'll be back next week. This was the Red Zone.
Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.